It's Wednesday, April 8th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 142 of Fear the Booth, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
My name is Chris. Welcome back, Dan.
Well, thank you.
Welcome back. Your boat didn't sink. That's a plus.
It's good to be back, and also it's just a nice break from our normal questionable sound quality live recordings, being back here in the studio with a whole new setup. We'll see how that works.
We have new shinies.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Chad and I are considering something.
I am no longer considering. I'm set.
You're committed to doing this.
I am. I'm committed to doing this.
All right. I'm going to do it. I'm considering. I'm strongly leaning towards yes, but I'm considering. Mm-hmm. Here's what we're going to do.
I think this is going to be some kind of a lifestyle change.
Chad's hair is incredibly long. My hair is incredibly beautiful and therefore incredibly valuable.
But not really that long.
So... No, it was. It's not short now, but I got a couple inches cut off. Yeah, so it's now a little below shoulder length, where it used to be kind of down my back.
Mine is about, what, to the middle of my back?
Yeah.
It used to be all the way down to the small of my back.
Well, I got trimmed. We measured your hair.
Mine goes down to my ankles.
We measured, I'm not even going to dignify that.
Not the hair on your head, old man, but.
We measured Chad's ponytail, and it came out to, somewhere between like 12 and 14 inches. Whereas
wow.
So here's what we're thinking about doing. We thought, you know what? Maybe we should do some kind of a charity donation, put a ransom on our hair, at which point we're going to donate it to Locks of Love.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we can do a direct cash donation to Locks of Love. So if we can't, we would find some similar children's charity.
Like Child's Play or March of Dimes.
March of Dimes or some kind of leukemia research or something like that. But what we discovered upon reading through the requirements is that Chad's hair meets all the requirements. Mine does not, because after having gotten it cut, I'm a few inches short of what we need. So we're going to call this charity drive.
You're a little short?
Dan's not quite long enough.
I was going to let it slide.
I totally forgot that we were going to call it that.
You can call it Carlos Disappointed.
I was about to say, the reaction is, that's all you've got?
So we're going to call this charity Dan's Not Quite Long Enough. And we'll put some kind of a bounty on Chad's hair and mine. And if people reach that amount, then we will get our hair cut. Yes. Well, Chad, you're going bald.
I am. You're not going to go bald. Basically, with Locks of Love, you wrap it into a ponytail and you cut off the ponytail. I'm going to go further because once I get the ponytail cut off, I'm going to go totally bald. Because the whole reason I'm doing this, besides, you know, helping kids and whatnot and the fun of it, is that I am starting to get a little thin on top. Thanks, Dad. Jerk.
Yeah, I'm not going bald.
No, you're not.
And I don't know that I can go bald simply because, well, I mean, it'd screw up the balance of power in the universe.
Primacron would win.
Yeah, exactly. But the other reason is because since I deal with clients and such through my company, I can't be looking like maybe a skinhead. And so
half the guys at my work are bald is in, apparently.
Right.
You know, who knew? But bald, like shaved head bald is in, and there's a lot of guys at my work who are.
See, I don't think it's the bald head that's going to do you in to make you look like a skinhead, Dan. It's that swastika that you have tattooed on your skull.
On my scalp.
Underneath that, that's what's going to reveal you as a skinhead.
So
Dan hit a rough 13 years old.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
So anyway, stay tuned. Mm-hmm. If Dan's Not Quite Long Enough is a cause that you believe in.
God, I love that name.
That is the best name ever. Chad, you know, if you do this, you're going to become the Bruce Willis of the podcasting world.
That'd be crazy. You could get Bruce Willis to play me in the Fear the Boot movie.
Yes.
That's in production
If he's the Bruce Willis, can I be the Ashton Kutcher?
You could be the Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah.
All right. So what do you guys... Pat, shut up.
So, hey, there you see. That's proof. I can't say anything now, people.
Yeah, that's right.
It's all his fault.
All right. So what do you guys want to talk about next? You want to do why video games are pissing off Chad?
Oh, my God. I'm frothing. I've got nerd rage.
Or Chris gaming with kids.
Well, Chris gaming with kids is nice.
It's shorter. Oh, it'll be a lot shorter than what you have to talk about, Chad.
Will it be as short as Dan?
It'll be longer than Dan.
Okay.
All right, Chris, then we'll let you go first.
Okay. So last weekend,
Wait. No, that's what she said from that?
Ooh, sorry. My oldest son, he used to play D&D, but he's kind of outgrown it, and he's not really that much into it.
Outgrown it?
Wow.
Well, yeah, he's outgrown in the sense that he's, as he said to me, it's a little bit too nerdy for him, and yeah, that's
Whoa.
Fine. I'll let that slide.
No, I wouldn't.
No, he's a good kid.
Chris, he's grounded.
He plays a lot of video games, so no. he's got nothing to complain about.
How old is he?
He is 16.
Ah. Oh, so, oh,
not too old for a spanking.
Says it all. I totally understand it.
So anyway, but his friends, who are same age as him, they very much have wanted to try D&D for some time.
Kick him out. Adopt those kids.
So and they're also pretty good kids. So So finally this past weekend, the three of us sat down. I ran them through the event, and I ran it Fear the Con. You know, we had a good time. It was a very enjoyable event. They had a good time. You know, they got into the rules. They got into, you know, just kind of the flow of the game. But the thing that blew me away the most was the fact that they came to the realization that they could do anything. You know, one of the kids even said, he goes, I can do anything here. I could run through the street naked, just randomly attacking people if I wanted to, couldn't I? And he said, well, yeah, sure you can. You know, whatever you want to do, you can do it. And I think, you know, what it came down to was these are kids who grew up playing video games and realizing that they're in a confined structure within that video game. There is still only so much that they can do. And then now to essentially take this technological step backwards, but realize that their options are completely and utterly unlimited, I think was really kind of a shock to them. And it was really interesting to see. You know, it was something that I didn't expect. I mean, I expected them to have a good time, and I expected them to be kind of fun. And I was curious to see more how their minds would visually fill in, you know, all the gaps that, you know, a tabletop RPG can't give that a video game can give. But that didn't even come up at all. They were just more amazed by the fact that their possibilities were endless.
You know what I found interesting along those lines is that I have met, as I'm sure most people in the show have, a ton of people who have a lot of problems with RPGs. But I have never, that I can recall, had a person where I sat down and once I explained to them what an RPG really is, they didn't like it. Like, I cannot think of one person where once I explained the game, they still didn't like it.
Maybe they were like, well, that's not something that would interest me that I would never play. But, you know, that does sound pretty interesting. You know, that does sound cool. Not my cup of tea, but that does sound pretty cool. Yeah. There's a whole lot of misconception out there of what an RPG is and what it's all about. And then there's also the stereotype of the person who plays the RPG.
Exactly. You know, and even my son had to admit afterwards that he did actually have a pretty good time, and that I think that he enjoyed more playing with his friends than he maybe did with his family members.
Sure.
But I think you're absolutely right. There are some misconceptions out there. And then when these guys get exposed to it and have a good time, suddenly they become two new converts to the cause, so to speak.
Now, Chris, I want to let off Chad's nerd rage before he has a heart problem.
You go right ahead.
But I was wondering, there's something you kind of bring up in this. It's a topic in the background of what you just described that people have been wanting us to develop for a while. So in a couple of minutes here, could we come back to gaming with kids?
Sure.
Because you have brought up several little nerdlings in the hobby, and I'd love to talk to you about how you've done that and, you know, let's talk about what goes into that.
Mm-hmm.
But first,
what is up with video games? I'm raging right now. Sega, I guess, just came out with their new Total War game, and I am a huge Total War
Empire fan. Total War.
Yeah, I have been playing since Rome. I tried to play Shogun. Shogun was their first game. Ridiculously hard when the training mission kicks your ass. Totally turned me off to it. Got turned on to Rome, played Medieval 2, played all the expansions on them, loved them. Was waiting with bated breath for Empire. Now, Total War, in case you're not familiar, it's a sort of RTS, but it's not like how you think of an RTS. It's not like you have a map and you lay down a bunker and then you have some guys farm some ore. And then when you get so much ore, the bunker starts making enemy or making guys and you send them out to the... It's not like that at all. It's very historical based. It takes a period of years in history and it takes place on Earth, and there's no magic, and it takes historical units of real countries
like,
and leaders.
You have like regions, and you manage cities within the regions.
It's sort of like a Civ type.
Yeah, it's like
game.
A combination between Civ and something like the Myth series,
right?
Where you have kind of fixed armies come into combat.
Yeah, fixed armies, and then you build up an army, and then you send them out in the field, and what you got in the field is what you have.
Which is not the bitch. We're just setting up where the bitch came from.
Yeah. Well, so I start playing it, and it's pretty cool at first, and then it starts crashing. And I'm like, oh, man, is my computer screwed up? Video drivers? You know, I start troubleshooting the whole thing. Sorry, I start getting online. Everybody is having problems with crashing. You get to a certain point in the game, and it's these consistent crashes all the time. Your save game, it gets corrupted. So you spend a turn tweaking your empire, doing this, doing these little political maneuvers, doing a huge, gigantic battle that determines, you know, the fate of this country and doing all this stuff. And then you save the game, and then when it tries to load the game, it can't. And all that stuff, you have to go back to an older save, and you have to redo all that stuff again. Or the game crashes, and it corrupts the file, and now you have to go back two or three saves, and you have to do all this stuff again. And it does that three or four times in one sitting, in one couple-hour play session. Made me... Oh, right. I had to stop playing it.
So here's the question. Why are video games not held to the same legal standards as any other product in the world? If you bought a car that performed the way Ultima 9, Lords of Magic, apparently Empire Total War performed, you would have a lawsuit on your hands. Yeah. I mean, an easy lawsuit.
Even if we're not talking about using the car analogy, not stretching it too thin, saying like airbags didn't deploy and people died. Well, nobody's going to die. The air conditioner doesn't work.
Well, the car dies on the interstate all the time.
Yeah.
When you get up around 70, 80 miles an hour, the engine just cuts off.
Yeah. Or you can't start it in the morning. Or you go out there and all the tires are flat. And it's not because someone slashed them. It's because their tires are defective.
Or similarly, with like an MMO, if somebody released any other product in the world and said, you know what, it's not going to ship with feature X because it's not quite ready, but you bring it back into the dealership or the electronics store, wherever you got it, and within about 3 months, we're going to have it out. We're going to give it to you. Let's say a phone comes out, okay? And they say, you know what, the GPS thing, we're not quite ready with the firmware, but it will go ahead and come out in like 3 months, at which point we'll give it to you, and they never deliver it.
Right.
You get a class action suit.
Yeah, exactly.
But an MMO...
Yeah, or any video game.
And any video game can sit there...
MMOs are majorly
notorious
stories.
Can sit there claiming again and again and again in all their promotional material that this is what they're going to do, or this is what the game will do, and you get it, and in the case of some games that outright doesn't work, and maybe they patch it, sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's no patch forthcoming, or they promise features which are absolutely never delivered. Mm-hmm. And I know to some degree, this is kind of a ridiculous nerd rage thing, I guess, because people get all worked up on the WoW forums and threaten to sue, and they're just full of crap.
Yeah.
But the question is this, why can a video game manufacturer get away with shenanigans that no other industry on the face of the earth would be allowed to do without getting the crap suit out of them?
And the thing is, it's like people are like, oh, well, you shouldn't care so much. Oh, you shouldn't care. It's just a game. It's just a video game. It's just light entertainment. Who cares? It's like, no, I work a job. I work very hard at my job to earn money. And I have to pay all of my other bills, and I can scrape enough money that I can entertain myself and keep myself happy in other ways that doesn't involve putting gas in my car or paying my rent or buying food for myself and my family. And that entertainment money, I have to decide, am I going to spend it here? Am I going to spend it there? And I spend that hard-earned money on a video game when the video game company doesn't put as much effort that I did into earning the money, but they're happy to take.
Right.
I think what you're dealing with here is a matter of scale. To go back to your car analogy, you look at the number of people that use a car versus the number of people that play video games. That alone should tell you right there is that video games, for as popular as they are and for as much money as that industry generates, huge amount of money, it still hasn't reached that mass tipping point where it garners that same attention as an undeployed airbag. And I think that's why. And I think that a precedent has already been set because they got away with it in the beginning
Yeah.
And so they're going to continue to get away with it now because they did before.
Now, the precedent part, I'll agree with you on. The scale, I'm not sure I'll agree with you on presently, maybe in years past. But as it stands now,
they're making more money than movies.
Yeah, video games are the largest form of entertainment. In terms of dollars spent, video games are the largest form of entertainment in the world, period. They beat out TV.
Well, you know, that's true. You're absolutely right. That's true. And you can still go, you can still get your money back from a movie that you didn't like.
And see, that's the thing. Like, say, okay, we'll use my Total War example. I cannot take this game that I am completely dissatisfied with, that should be fun, that I should be enjoying, that crashes, that's missing features, that is just has all these issues with. I cannot take that game and go back to Best Buy and lay it on the counter and say, I want my money back for it.
Yeah. To give you,
I cannot do that.
To give you two counterexamples of other industries and how this works, I don't know the details, so I'm not going to quote them because I'm going to get them a little bit wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But Sprint recently said that they were going to charge 79 cents per bill for some feature or fee or something, and they just changed the fee to 99 cents, which kicked off a lawsuit and basically absolved, I don't know if absolved is the right word there, but basically, but negated the contract of every person that had been signed with them for a change of 20 cents on the bill. Another example, I have a box of cereal sitting on top of my fridge right now that has a picture of the cereal, and it's got a bunch of different kind of, you know, fruits and nuts and stuff in it. And one of the things in the picture is raspberry. And they have to indicate that raspberries aren't really in the cereal.
It's just there to make the picture look
raspberries in a cereal, okay?
Right.
Like a $3 box of cereal does not include the raspberries in the picture. And they have to indicate that because otherwise they have a potential lawsuit on their
hands. But you have
a
$60 video game that they promise features for in all the advertisements leading up to it. In all the previous games, like in this case in Total War, in the previous game it had these different features, but now they're not in this one.
Are video game companies in a certain way suffering from that stereotype that it's a video game? I mean, it's, you know, it's the realm of kids.
No, I
mean,
are they
suffering from essentially from that reputation?
Actually,
what I think that they're suffering from is that they're suffering from greed. And they know that no one will do anything.
No, yeah, what it's going to take is one big lawsuit where somebody goes after like an MMO company and says, you know what, I bought this game because you were promising this. Or I bought a game, it didn't work, no patches forthcoming. They sue them, and that's going to change the industry. Yeah. But you need that first one to...
Well, I think eventually what's going to happen is that the market is going to shift. Pretty much what we're talking about here is a lot of PC gaming. And a lot of the issues that are brought up, that we're bringing up, are what console gamers don't have to suffer with because of certain technological limitations, actually.
Simpler.
And the standards that the console makers set and that sort of thing. You know, the broken promises and stuff.
Broken promises, to me, it's an agitation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if for me that would be the central issue because you can do, well, every time do they say anything? Is it suddenly a binding contract? And I think there's two sides to this. On one hand, if they're setting you up for a product because of promised features, yeah, they ought to be responsible
for that. And I think MMOs are the biggest.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I mean, conversely, I don't want to sound so psycho on this where every time a moderator on a forum mentions they might be thinking about this, that, or the other,
suddenly
we need to get the police and the... You know, ATF involved.
Oh my God, did you call the police?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I hope people don't overhear this. But in the case of things that just plain don't work, and once again, no fix is forthcoming.
A lot of this problem, consoles aren't immune to it, but a lot of these problems come from PC gaming, and this is why PC gaming is dying. This is why when you go into a Best Buy or whatever, or they had rows and rows and rows of PC gaming and a small section for console gaming, I went to Best Buy to buy this game.
Right.
I couldn't find the PC gaming section. There were no signage. It wasn't where it normally was. I know that it had been shrinking. I had to go look for it. It was literally one shelf row shoved in the back in the last section, and you could not find it. I was even walking through the section. I was just like, wow, PC gaming used to be huge, and consoles are killing it. And that's why consoles are killing it, because people know that they could walk in to a store and they can buy a console game for your Xbox or PS3 or Wii or whatever. And when they go home, it'll work. It'll just work. You know, that's all
there
is to it. The
system might not, but the game
will. Well, yeah, they do have consoles. Do have their own problems, and that's on the other end of the
argument. Well, and also some console games are getting sloppier. Where
I think that you're going to start seeing the more complex console games are going to come. You're going to hit this equilibrium where there really aren't PC games anymore, only very few, or it's a niche market. And console games are going to work a lot all the time. They're going to deliver features, but then PC games are going to go away. Console games are going to get more complex. They're going to involve more downloadable stuff. And you're going to see more and more console patches. You're going to see more and more features. And it's because it's a systematic problem within the video game industry.
Well, it's all about they've got to get it out fast, quicker, faster, better. All of the gamers.
Well, no, quicker and faster, definitely not better.
Oh, I'm sorry, not better, quicker and faster, get it out to, because the extremely high demand of the public. I'm sitting here thinking about this, and in my mind, what it all gets down to is
a
couple
of
things.
And there's a lot of money tied up in there.
Well, yeah, things that come across to me. A, as a consumer, we shouldn't put up with it. But unfortunately, we do, because why? We want the game. Yeah. We are voraciously hungry for new content, new games, new
fun. And the problem is I can't vote with my dollar. That's what pisses me off, because I'm a big believer of the market system.
Yeah.
If we had reviewers who are actual journalists and not paid mouthpieces for the video game industry, where I can go and look at reviews and say, this reviewer says it's bad, these people are saying it's bad, I know the game's bad, I'm not going to buy it. But no, it's like, I think Penny Arcade made this joke, IGN or whoever has a game scale. It's not 1 to 10, it's 8 to 10.
Right.
You know, and...
Well, and Penny Arcade's probably one, I mean, they're one of the...
Yeah,
the few voices out there they'll tell you what they think
of the
game.
But that's just one source and they're one taste, so I can't get a feel for it. No. And that's my problem, is that I can't read reviews to decide whether a game is going to be good or not. Mm-mm. I don't know whether or not a game is going to be really bad unless I wait for months after the game's been out and research forums and such. So I have to buy a game within a week or 2 weeks that it comes out. And I bought Empire Total War a couple weeks after it came out. I have to play it and see if it works, and if it works, if it has all the features that I want in it, and if it doesn't, I cannot return it and get my money back.
Yeah. This isn't part of the problem of what you're dealing with, though, caused in a certain sense, Chad, by piracy, because you know the stores have those return policies for a very specific reason, because so frequent, so many people go, they copy the game, and then they go and return it.
Isn't this kind of like saying you couldn't be able to return a car because there are irresponsible drivers out there? I mean,
I'm just saying, isn't it the particular of the media that we're dealing with here, and it's a video game, because of the nature of what it is and the fact that it can be duplicated relatively easily, that doesn't it hamper part of the efforts in this, though?
Let me put to you this way, and this is just life is unfair. I'm going to be a smug, sanctimonious asshole here for just a second.
As opposed to when?
As opposed to whenever.
Okay.
I don't pirate video games. I don't pirate music. I don't pirate DVDs. Every CD I own, I bought. Every movie I own, I bought. Every video game I own, I bought. Every piece of software on my computer, including the OS, I bought. And here's the thing. I don't do any of the piracy thing. Why am I being punished? Why are they treating me like the pirate by putting all the restrictive DRM on my video games and my media? Why are they having the restrictive return policies on me? I'm the good citizen. I earn my money and I pay for it. And yet I'm being treated like the criminal. I'm being treated like the pirate. They're putting out defective product, huge amounts of DRM that screw the game up, screw the media up, make it hard to deal with. What is it that keeps me from going out and downloading a game that has no DRM on it and I didn't pay for, so if it is messed up, I just delete it and I'm out nothing? They push people to piracy. Video game manufacturers push people to piracy by treating legitimate customers as pirates.
Yeah, they do. And I think it's a horrible thing, but I think that's symptomatic. The companies look at their very customers, their very lifeblood, as criminals, as thieves. They consider all of them. They are the ones buying it, but they're all damned thieves.
Yep.
And that's exactly the way they treat us. It's horrible. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I feel your pain.
When you buy
it's not right, but
a car alarm doesn't keep me out of my car. Because the car manufacturers don't treat me like a thief.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe.
And I'm not saying I disagree with you with anything you said, but I think it's an apples to oranges thing because you can't compare a video game to a car because it's just not the same. It's not the same thing. Yes, it's a product. Yes, it's purchased. But yet at the same time, can't download a car. You know, you just can't do it. It's a physical object that you must go out and purchase and you must interact with. And I don't want to derail this too far, but I think that mindset among the video game industry is maybe part of the problem. It certainly contributes to the problem that you have on the retail end of it. I mean, you busted the tape on the box. You can't bring it back. You're done. You know, and specifically because of that reason.
Here's the thing, and I want to kind of wrap this up and move on to the next topic because I don't want to turn this entire episode into us.
I told you, man, I had nerd rage.
Oh, I know. Yeah, and I'll agree with you, Chris. So, okay, some of this is apples and oranges because you can do things with video games that you can't do with cars. I understand that. Okay, anyone who's going to write in and say, well, wait a minute, you don't understand how video games are made. You don't understand. There's a difference. I follow that. But the basic issue here is in no other form of product could I sell you something fundamentally defective and you would be expected to have no recourse. That there is nothing you can do to get your money back. There is nothing you can do to pursue the company. That you just have to accept that what you have is busted. And because of whatever reason by which they're trying to protect themselves from loss, you can't get back your money. Mm-hmm. And so in the end, you end up paying the price for both the pirates and for their incompetence.
Right.
And that, yes. You couldn't get away with this in anything. I mean, I couldn't sell you a ream of paper and get away with this, but you can do it with a video game. Let's change gears completely to something RPG related and a lot more fuzzy.
This is going to be our light topic, too.
Chad, you'll get some relaxing tea.
I do. I need some.
It's funny when we came into this, we're going to do a lighter show.
This has been awesome. They're going to love it.
All right.
So, I actually talked.
However, this part is going
to
be lighter.
All your fan is going to love it.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's talk about role playing with kids. And I want to talk about this from maybe a couple angles.
Because we did do a role playing with kids episode, but kind of kids present and.
A little bit, not exactly. But what I want to talk about here is, first off, if you've got kids that are in your household or friends of children in your household, or maybe you're even responsible for something like an RPG club at a school, we're going to talk about, first of all, how do you help these kids understand what a game is? How do you gear the games for them? How do you keep them entertained?
How do you recruit them in?
How do you get them while
they're young, man?
What kinds of games work and don't work? And I think this is going to be an interesting topic to talk about for a couple reasons. One of which is, it's a topic we've hinted around for a while, but never gone straight at. Chris, you've got kids you're bringing up in the hobby. And also on our last episode, which I'm the only one that was there for, and I don't know if you guys have had a chance to listen to, because
I don't ever listen to the show.
Well, and it just dropped about 3 hours or before this recording. But I was talking to to Larry, the gentleman from Mayfair, who was talking about how people bringing kids into the hobby is not just changing the demographic of the hobby, not just changing the types of games that are being made, but he believes that within a generation we'll have changed the image of tabletop gaming, because suddenly it's no longer this outsider thing that other people do and pick up in their college or high school or even adulthood, but this is something that people are just used to growing up around. And so I want to talk about it from all these different angles, but let's set one parameter here, which is when we're talking about kids, I am not talking colloquially about like 18-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're talking about children here.
Like under 13?
Yeah, 13 and under, 14 and under. We're not talking about young adults, okay? Mm-hmm. We are talking about children. So, Chris, I'm going to pass this to you to start this off, and I'd like you to give us some anecdotes. How did you introduce your kids to role-playing? What were the early experiences like? What games did you pick? How did you set up the games? I know I just kind of shotgunned you there, so just pick a place and go.
Basically, I kind of introduced my kids into... I wanted to start as simply as possible. And I wanted to pick something where the basic core mechanics or core concepts of a role-playing game could be kind of encompassed in. Dice rolling, movement around within the game itself, different abilities between different character types, that kind of thing. And really what worked the best for me was the game HeroQuest, old Milton Bradley game that was an adaptation, I think, of the Games Workshop HeroQuest.
I thought it was the other way around. I could be wrong. But it doesn't matter. It's academic. HeroQuest is a great game.
I'm not sure which chicken or egg came first, but very simple thing. It's a finite board. It's very visual because it has little furniture. It has doors. Yep. It has plastic miniatures.
I have great memories playing that with my cousins. Because the whole thing was you go through the dungeon and you loot stuff and you get gold and items and stuff. And our battle cry was not go get them or anything. It was greed.
Then that's what it is. You go into a room, you kill monsters, take their stuff. And even though that's something that we kind of railed against, at this level, it's a good way to start. And it teaches that good element of teamwork in a real powerful way. And the fact that in the game rules, it even emphasizes the fact that you have to work together. And sure enough, that's exactly what you have to do. And each character type that you could play has their own certain abilities. Some can cast spells. Some can only fight. Some do a little bit of both, but yet not very good either way. And you can pick up items along the way. And so we ran through all the quests that came in the initial pack, and they really kind of, you know, got into it and, you know, enjoyed it. And so once they had graduated from really that basic thing, we kind of moved on to, you know, regular D&D. And this is kind of where I feel that, in a certain way, I kind of fell off in a little way, because came at them from my experience level. I threw maybe a bit too much at them in a certain sense. I took a much larger step than I think than what I should have. I didn't continue with that gradual progression.
What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, basically, I came at them with a certain sense in my mind. This is their underlying goal. This is the Uber plot that I want to have them undertake and go through, as opposed to let's just go on an adventure. Let's just treat it like it was a demo event at a con, which is really what I probably should have done.
So would you say it's a good suggestion that when you're start, and obviously every kid's going to be a little different, okay?
Absolutely.
We talk about knowing your group with adults, and I think we can certainly say
doubly so with kids.
But would you say that there is an advantage when you're running a game with children to be very, very free-flowing, don't beat them up with rules, don't beat them up with hard reality, very heavily focus on imagination and wild impossibilities, almost make this more fairy tale and bedtime story than... Is that accurate, or do you?
I would say that's somewhat accurate. Yeah, don't. Yeah, especially the part about bogging down with the rules, because any game that you do, you always have your section of esoteric and really really crunchy rules. Who cares? Especially a 10-year-old ain't gonna care. And in fact, it's not only they're not gonna care, they're gonna get turned off.
Yeah.
So reduce it to a simple roll off if that's what you need to do.
D&D grapple rules for a 10-year-old, not so much.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And a perfect example of it. Don't even go there, because it's all it's going to do is slow down the game.
Yeah. What should you do as a GM? Say your 10-year-old says, well, my paladin, I want to grapple with that ogre. And D&D is notorious, really, I don't know about 4th edition, but D&D has notoriously complex grapple rules and such. Do you just fudge it? Do you just say, well, hey, my 10-year-old, he wants to win. I want him to win. Sure, you twist his arm off just like Beowulf.
Yeah, it's the whole... keep it simple.
Yeah, you make him roll off and maybe throw out a couple modifiers. Say, well, you know, he's almost twice as big as you, so I'm going to give him a couple extra bonuses to his roll, but you've got this, and then you just go at it. And yeah, make it dramatic. And I think that's where the fairy tale aspect comes in.
If I had a 10-year-old who looked at me and said, Dad, I want to rip his arm off and beat him with it, just like Beowulf, I wouldn't even roll the dice. Win.
A tear.
You do it.
A tear of pride.
I would cry.
Would be rolling down my face.
I'd be like, I'm sorry, son. I can't go through your room.
One other thing I was going to say that in addressing what you had said, in this, I guess, you know, you would kind of think, well, duh. But be visually descriptive at almost every turn of the game. And yes, it will certainly slow things down. But it's worth it. And when I was just playing with my son's friends, because we're going through some combat, and I'm like, okay, yeah, you hit him. Okay, but then I thought, wait, I can't do that because right. I want to hook these guys in. So I had to take a step back, and every time they hit, I had to describe, you hit them this way, you hit them that way. And yeah, it slowed things down a lot. But it was worth it. It was worth it in the end because it got them more into it. It really got them into it.
What are 15-year-old boys into? Blood, violence, and sex.
Absolutely.
Well, you can't really pull the sex into that. That'd be a little creepy, but blood and violence, hey. Pour it on.
Well, I would take it from a slightly less dark route than that.
Which no, you're good guys. It's bad guy blood.
Well, what if you're running the game for an 8-year-old girl? I mean,
they explode into ponies and flowers.
Well, what I would say is this. Kids have very active imaginations. That's not a problem in a role-playing game.
Yeah.
Play to that. Give them something to imagine. Give them lots of description.
So do you think
make things, if necessary, a little more over the top?
Now, would you say, though, that maybe you should go for the Alfred Hitchcock angle on it? And I don't mean these deep, layered plots of twisty-turniness, but I'm talking give their imagination just enough to work with.
Maybe.
Just plant a seed of something in there and let their imagination take off with it so it'll be far bigger than anything you could describe.
Maybe, but the one thing that I would say is with kids, while they're going to be more imaginative than most adults, they also have less real-world experience.
Mm.
And so you can't necessarily
assume... I'm sorry, I've never ripped anyone's arm off, as much as I've tried and wanted to.
Well, but here's the thing. You're familiar with Beowulf. You're familiar with the image. Is Sky...
He's two.
But my point being, though,
Beowulf has way too many syllables right now.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Precisely. And I realize you're kids too, but yeah. I'm being facetious.
Sure.
Here.
Well, let's imagine Skye is a 9-year-old.
Right. Imagine he's a 9-year-old. Okay. Maybe this isn't a great example because
I would read Beowulf to him.
I know you would, which is why maybe it's not a great example. Chris, let me run a couple things here past you, and not that I don't have my own opinions, but. As someone who's just an uncle, I don't want people frothing at me because I'm the stereotypical no children guy giving advice on
Dan,
children.
I think that in this case, it is good advice coming from you because people like me and Pat and Chris know how we would do it with our own kids.
Right.
Yes.
Whereas you have much broader general advice, and you could look and see what we're doing, and you could say, well, this kind of works. Well, maybe you guys don't see it like this. Try this.
Let me start with.
So go ahead and pontificate away.
Okay, let me pontificate on a couple things here. First off, let's start at the start. You want to draw them into a role playing game. Chris, you talked about using board games as kind of a jumping off product, but something else that I would suggest, once you're pontificating wildly here,
love it,
is to look at the things they're already interested in, just like you would with an adult, and see, can you make a game that either leverages those intellectual properties, or can you, for example, if they're really into Power Rangers, can you sketch up a Power Rangers RPG or find one somewhere on Google? I'm not aware of a real one, but there might be an unlicensed one out there somewhere. Or at least say, you know what, my daughter's really into Pegasi, so there's going to be a Pegasus in this adventure that's going to be her best friend, you know, and find those things they're interested in and leverage them.
Absolutely. You should do that. And as you were talking about that, that reminded me of a time when I was sitting down with my two nephews and they're playing with Legos and we're kind of, you know, just having some fun with them. And I said, you know what? And of course, you know, as they're playing, they're kind of fighting. I said, let's actually kind of make a game out of this. So you got your guy here, you got your guy here. And let's, you know, we found some dice, assigned some numbers to each of the guys they had, and then we just made rules up on the spot and just started fighting with them, you know, and we even figured out a way to calculate some ranges. We kind of turned it into a miniature war game, but they were doing very action-y thing with Legos and fighting with them, and basically what I just threw was a very loose structure around that to kind of make it happen, you know, and of course, as somebody got injured, pop, the Lego comes off, you know, and again, so you had that visual element that really, you know, kind of... Cool. Turns them on.
I have this plan now, just to sort of to set this up. My son Duncan is also 2 years old, and I've thought about this.
Just set up a play date.
Well, yeah, we do actually. But I thought about this, and I've had this in mind for a while because I thought, you know, with Duncan, I want him to role play as soon as possible. So this is my idea, and because I found some of these really cool like knight toys, they're like plastic. They're for like ages 3 and up. There's this one specific German company that makes some really cool.
Oh, I know what
Schleich.
You're talking about.
Yeah, yes. The company
yes.
Schleich.
Yes. Nice. Those things are
I
gorgeous.
I love them. They're beautiful. There's like a lion
Yeah, and they have wizards and dragons.
They've got everything. They've done an Eastern campaign where it's the Knights Templar and the Arabs. But anyway, my thought was, I saw these, I'm like, oh my God, I've got to get these, because they even has castles and everything like that. I thought, I've got to get this. Hopefully Duncan will think these things are neat.
Yeah.
But then what I want to do is, instead of just playing the typical, knights and whatever, or playing toy soldiers, I want to try to work it into a game. So I want to bring in a very simple way of, Duncan has his army and I'll have my army and they're going to fight. But instead of just him saying, pew, pew, you're dead, and I say, oh, my guy falls over, I want to bring dice into it.
Right.
Very simply. Like a roll-off, I think, would probably be the best thing. So that's at least my idea. We'll see how it actually works. It might not work at all.
You could even do measuring, but
I
want to
do that kind of thing. You know,
you don't want to get into like inches and measuring tape and stuff. But you could take like a piece of yarn.
Sure.
That's one foot long.
And you have two guys, they get close enough, they fight. It's like, okay, Duncan, here's your die. Here's my die. We're going to roll off.
Yeah.
Whoever rolls higher wins. For me, I think as early as you can get them into it and make it simple, it's great. So
awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Yeah.
And there's a lot of great resources out there for this right now. And there hasn't really been in years past. I mean, there's been some, not as much, but you can go out there now, and just like you can find the girlfriend games, you can find the kid games.
Yeah. Yes.
And those might be board games like HeroQuest. I mean, those might even be really simple role-playing games.
In the past, Fear the Boot has kind of made fun of games like Bella Sierra and stuff, and it's like, it's perfect. I see role-playing games, and I know this isn't true overall, but this is just what I perceive. Role-playing games are trying to market to adults. They're trying to grow the adult demographic because that's where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
When instead they need to be like comic books, but comic books aren't really succeeding in this. They need to grow the children demographic. Maybe not 4 and 5 year olds or 2 year olds like our kids. That might be a little extreme, but 8, 9, 10 year olds to have games that their parents can play with them, or even they could play with themselves, that is role-playing game-esque, and it plants that seed and it kind of gets it going, and games could trail off into each other. I mean, look at Pokemon. Pokemon is for little kids. They have a card game that the kids barely even understand anyway. Some are geniuses at it, of course, but Pokemon leads into Yu-Gi-Oh! Yu-Gi-Oh! has its own cards, and then Yu-Gi-Oh! Leads into something Magic. My nephew, I can't even keep track anymore.
Right.
And that leads into that, and why can't role-playing games do that? Why can't role-playing games go after the kids in the same ways to have products that tear up and bump up into each other that are simple enough for them to understand, have all the role-playing game fundamentals, and then grows them into role-player so when they're 20 years old and in college, choosing a role-playing game is a normal and acceptable thing where they're standing at the counter and they're like, well, I could either buy a CD, or I could buy some music, or I could buy a video game, or I could buy a new role-playing game supplement. For the majority of people out there, that's not even an option.
Yeah.
It's just, it's going to be these other things. They don't even know what a role-playing game is.
I can remember as a kid, my first true role-playing game, I've said on the show, was Fast as Star Trek in 1988. But I believe my first
Ravenloft, the module.
Yeah,
ugh.
That's a winner. But my first role-playing game, I believe, really, was going back to a very young age. All my toys had story.
Mm-hmm.
There was an epic going on. We invented universes, and it was not us acting out the TV shows.
Right.
Tex and I, we invented completely new stories, completely new settings for these things. There's a great way to get your kids going on this. Take a simple game. Toy Wars comes to mind. If you're not familiar with Toy Wars, I have no idea if it's still in print or not. You can probably find the rules online. But basically what you do is you take toys, any toys, whatever toy they have in their playroom, it does not matter. You put them on a table, you get great big foam D6s if you have them, just because they're really dramatic when they roll. And there are rules for moving these toys around, and very, very simple rules we're doing these kind of over under sort of roles and beating up each other's toys. And you can get this going, and you can start asking them to imagine, why is this happening? You put up their favorite toy, whatever it is, and you say, okay, well, who's going to be the bad guy? Who's he going to fight? Well, he's going to fight this toy. Well, why is that? Well, what happens if this guy wins? Can they come back for another round later or something?
Yeah.
And start putting story into these really simple games that they may already be playing. Chris, let me run something else by you here. You kind of mentioned this with HeroQuest, but this is something that I think would apply elsewhere. We've talked about adult role-playing games having little props or stop giving me a look, Pat. You know what I mean. I'm not talking about Cowboy and Superman, but we've talked about having things like props or whatnot around the table to try and just draw people in a little more. But with kids, do you guys think there is a unique advantage to having tangible reward that when you open the chest and find 10 gold pieces, you give them 10 poker chips they can stack in front of themselves and hold on to? Or when they get a clue, you really make sure that you've got a fake little piece of parchment that they can take and hold on and play with or whatever.
I love that stuff in a normal role-playing game, and I'm 33 years old.
Yeah, I do too, but I think, I'm busting it on you, Chris, sorry, but I'm on a roll. I think that's paramount. I think that is an excellent, excellent idea, because kids are very, well, they're very imaginative, but they're very tactile. So I think for them to actually have that in front of them, and it's just joy and wonderment, I think, in their eyes, and it'll just I think it's an excellent idea. So yeah, I'm all in favor of it. And I get excited about it too.
And you know what, gee, that's just another thing these role-playing game companies can market, and they don't.
I know.
You imagine, like, you go to buy your role-playing game or whatever that you want to play with your kid, and then there's a shipper that's right next to it cross-selling. A shipper is like a display box that's cross-selling fake gold coins and the lost treasure map and this sort of cheap little trinket props bucks a piece.
That'd be neat, having a module.
I want this for me.
I know.
Why don't they do this?
That'd be great. Can you imagine buying a module that is kind of like, I don't say shrink wrap, like plastic package, where there would normally be a cardboard colorful insert, there's like a little module book, and then on front of it in the little plastic blisters, you've got a stack of coins and a special sword.
See, I think that D&D has the whole thing wrong, trying to sell models and going towards models and figs and battle maps and all that stuff and the fake walls. I'm sure people drop serious coin on that, but, you know, the little trinkets. I mean, I guess there's a lot of old sort of crusty grognards out there going, ah, the back of my day, all I needed was my unpainted lead mini, my chess pieces for monsters, and my
heart disease.
my heart disease and diabetes. But it's a game. We're all supposed to be having fun, and that sort of stuff is fun.
And these are the easy things that you can get for the younger kids, because the things that we're talking about here are more toward the younger generations, the younger people coming in. The other things like the lead figures, the miniatures, the walls and everything, those are great. I love them. I've played with them. Yeah. I think they're fantastic, but they're marketed to an older generation. Totally. Like you said, they're marketed to the people that have the money to pay for them because they're not cheap.
That's right.
And they're great. And they do, for me, they enhance the role-playing experience, but think of it as the advanced. And a good example is like with Legos, because you're talking about this before. Legos is a good example of a company that's got it together. They have very simple, basic Legos for kids, young kids. What happens when they get older in their teens? They had, at least for when I was a kid, and I think they still do, they had like the Legos Expert or the advanced type Legos, much more complex in what you could build with them. It sort of grew with the kids. I mean, as you got older, you've got more complex things that you can do. So
wouldn't it be great to sit around and you're GMing for a group of like 9-year-olds and stuff, and you start handing out props, and then you take like poker chips that you've spray painted gold and you give them to one kid. And then you take an old compass you got at a yard sale and give it to another kid. And that's a clue to something. And then you have a little girl and you give her a magic ring, and it's, you know, some piece of costume jewelry, and hand it to her.
It's like a mood ring, so it actually turns colors.
Yeah. You know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And to another one, you hand like a small hand mirror or something. I don't even know. I mean, you could do all sorts of nifty stuff, and all that stuff is in the game, and it's important to the game and stuff, and it's part of a puzzle or a secret thing. And why isn't this in our games, Dan? I want spray painted gold poker chips.
I have some. I use them for War Machine.
I have put this in some games when at Fear the Con, when I ran the Transformers game. In the original way I'd written the rules, you just had a numeric pool on your sheet. So as you used up Energon, as you fired guns or you transformed or whatever, you just kind of, you know, erased and scratched it down the same way you would hit points.
Yeah.
But what I did for this instead is, you know what? People have fun with tangible things. So what I did was I went out the day before Fear the Con, bought an old style, classic style Risk game where the armies were the little wooden cubes and then the little wooden, they're kind of like triangles or not exactly, but you know what I mean. They're kind of triangle, long triangle shape. I don't know what the proper name for the geometric term is, and somebody's going to post it on the forum.
Triangle?
No, because it's like a triangle but long. It'd be like a kind of like what a table tent would look like. Anyway, point being though that what I did with those was I passed those out as your Energon. So you were physically spending Energon by passing me little cubes, and then I was, you know, if they had ever recharged, you know, which they didn't, I would have passed some back.
You know, Quags has that system of yum-yums. It's been since Gen Con since I've actually read the book, but it's like candy. You don't have like a dice pool, you have a candy pool. There's, and the Game Master gives you, you out candy, and then you can like...
There's your potions. Bad. If you're playing a D&D game...
Oh my god, Hershey's Kisses, yeah.
Yeah, our blue jelly beans are healing potions, white jelly beans so are resistance to elements, or... No, you just be really powerful for one round.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh crap. I have the power of diabetes. You know what, and just to mention that, Dan, because I actually talked to people who played in your Transformers game, and that's one of the things that I would say they talked about the most is the fact, oh my god, it was so cool, we actually had Energon.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show... Kids I thought that was all so cool. Ages.
I didn't even play in the game, and I thought that was thing. Wild.
Oh yeah, I thought it was genius. We love this tangible stuff. It's gold. I mean, it's not. You're never going to go wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
Having some kind of a thing to, you know, enhance that sort of play.
Let me ask you guys this question. And I think it's obvious to some, but might not be so obvious to others. Why do we want to get kids into gaming?
Several reasons. One. Let's start off with the one that I think is accurate, albeit perhaps a little bit cold. It's a way of keeping the hobby alive.
Indeed.
It grows the hobby. It expands the hobby. It helps to ensure that in the next 10, 20 years, gaming will have increased in size and broadened in demographic. Now, that's...
Yep.
We certainly don't want to use our kids just to replace a pool of consumers, but I'm just, that's part of it.
Yeah,
okay?
I mean, that's market.
But I think more than that is right there, but... two other things. One, it's a social thing you can do together. The family that plays together stays together.
Mm-hmm.
It's an activity you can all do sitting around a table. It is extremely social. It's not like a video game. Any number of people can play within reason. Even a family of Hussian proportions, you can still do a role-playing game with. But on top of that, it's just a matter of wanting to pass on the good things. I mean, if you have a really good fishing spot, you want to take your kid there. You want to share that with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have had decades of positive experience with role-playing games. Why would we not want to pass that on to our kids and let them have the same positive experiences that we have?
Yeah,
it's something fun that we've done and that we enjoy, and we like sharing that fun with other people. And while the closest people to us happen to be our own, you know, spouses and children.
Let me talk about two perceived hurdles to getting your kids into this hobby. And Chris, I want you in particular to comment on this. One, for lack of a better word, I'm just going to be very blunt here. Kids are too dumb. They're not going to be able to understand the game. You're going to have to talk down to them or simplify things to the point that they really can't handle an RPG anyway.
I think that it depends on the age of the kid. I think that you might have a certain age when they're might be a little bit better than you at the game.
Yeah.
You know, as far as like the math and the cognitive skills go, they actually have time to read the rule books cover to cover and read all the supplements. But for the younger kids, yes, totally.
I think even for older kids, all you're going to do if you throw a rule book at them is, you know, you're going to lose a customer is essentially what you're going to do. You know, even when I'm playing with my son's friends, they're older, they can read, they get it, they're smart in math, they know all those things. But if I'd thrown the 3.5 PHB at them and said, here you go, go ahead and read that and then get back to me and we'll see what happens. It just wouldn't have worked. When it comes to, and I don't know if this is a gender thing, but when it comes to gaming with young girls, and I use my daughter as a specific example for this, her being 12 and 13 when we were playing this. Yeah, I guess this is somewhat true for all kids, but be ready really for anything. I sat down with my daughter to play, and it was just kind of a one-on-one thing. And I had an adventure lined up. I had notes taken. I was all ready to go. And all she wanted to do, and I've talked about this before in the forums, but all she wanted to do was take this horse that she had found from a previous encounter, and just ride around town. I had a map of the town. She just wanted to ride around and go to different areas in the map saying, what's here? I want to ride here. I want to ride here. I want to ride here. And just wanted to see what was going on. She didn't care at all about the adventure I'd lined up, about the quest, the mission, anything. She just wanted to ride around town and just see what was going on. And she totally threw me for a loop.
You know, and it would strike me that if you let that
sounds
go,
like a perfectly natural little girl.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely.
It sounds to me like if you let that go absolutely indefinitely, they'd probably get bored with the game.
Yes.
But at the same time, if you cut it off instantly, you're taking away the enjoyment.
Yeah.
So by all means, let her ride from place to place and
maybe have something happen gets to after a couple of stops.
So that riding the horse from place to place becomes a treat and interlude. It doesn't become the something you run into the ground. You know, getting back to the rules, it strikes me certainly that you need to simplify the rules. Maybe pick a game that's a little simpler to play, or if not, just fudge the rules and suddenly a D6 roll-off solves everything.
I'd love to pimp these guys. I'd have to say Quags is the way to go. It's quick, it's simple, it's easy to understand, and the rules mechanic involves candy.
Always a winner.
Yeah. I mean, what else could you get for little kids? I think it's great. Or adults, too. I love rule systems that involve candy.
The second thing I wanted to talk about as a potential difficulty is a short attention span.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now once again, this is going to vary from kid to kid, obviously.
I'm not a kid.
This is going to vary from Chad to anyone but Chad. But Chris, in your experience, you have four kids, obviously.
Yes.
And
that he knows of.
That I'm aware.
At least we presume all four are yours. And
Wow.
And
I'm not a handsome man, so yeah.
And I will assume that like most families of four, there's some pretty good diversity amongst those kids.
Yes, that's true. Yes.
Here's my question. Has attention span been an issue? And if so, how have you dealt with it? And if not, why not?
Surprisingly not. And I don't know if that is attributed to the fact that, you know, I made an effort to make sure that each individual was involved in some way, or if they were all engrossed in what was happening so that they all, you know, remained at attention. The duration in which we played, I think, was maybe around 2 hours. But they all, you know, really, when the times that we did sit down, they all basically sat in the seats and did pay attention for the most part. I mean, there wasn't really any major issues that went on. So for me, it really wasn't an issue. And I don't know what I would do exactly if it was. I mean, I guess maybe it would be a lot of bouncing around and making sure that those who are starting to fidget get attention paid to them to bring them back into the game. But it really wasn't a problem.
There's a lot of people in my family that have spent a very large portion of their life doing children's education. A lot of people I've known even outside of my family, just within my family. My mom's taught a Sunday school class for decades, an elementary school one, that is. My dad was an elementary and junior high band director for pretty much all of his life. One of my younger sisters is currently teaching fifth grade. I've known a bunch of other people. And when I sit down and I talk to them about trying to teach kids or involve kids in activities, the consistent way they always describe it is with kids, it's always going to be a little different. You may have to find some different ways to phrase things, some different ways to entertain them, some different ways to keep their attention, but don't ever underestimate them. Because if you walk in with the idea that they're just dumb and they can't focus on anything and they're too young to get anything and they have no ideas, you are really missing what they're capable of, and you're really missing, I mean, what could be a great and rewarding opportunity of running a game for and with these individuals, with these kids. And so I would recommend to anyone considering this, I mean, be cognizant of the differences between adult and kids. And we've talked about that, the tangible rewards, the imagination, the maybe more free form and over the top nature of some of the plot elements. But don't ever presume that they simply aren't capable of this. In terms of rules, they may not know complex math. They may not have the history that we do with role-playing games. So we may have, over the years, ramped up in complexity. We started with a simple game. Or maybe we started with a complex game, but if we're honest, we were playing it wrong for the first 2 years. And so they may not have that history to where you can throw a hero's book at them, presume they survive, and then hope they understand it. But, you know, once again, you can still bring them into the math. You can bring them into the rules. You can give them the same kind of experience we have, just changed around a little to fit that audience the same way you would change on any game to fit the changing players at a gaming table. Alrighty then. I think that's going to wrap it up for this show. So if you've got kids out there, start training them up in the hobby. Build little minions. Get them listening to Fear the Boot.
And even if you don't have kids, you have nephews.
You have nephews, you have nieces. You maybe have a local Boys and Girls Club. You have the library. You have all kinds of venues where you can reach out if you want to do that.
Mm-hmm. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Later. Ladies.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.